This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by CruiserMax Vibrant Cereal Seed Treatment for longer-lasting disease and insect protection for wheat and barley seeds, young seedlings, and roots.
Welcome to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe V filling in for Chip. He's preparing his Halloween costume, him and Davis. I think they have some sort of couples outfit. I'm not quite sure what, though. We're here on AgriTalk.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. And in the final segment, Kerry Artak delivers his weekly Artak Attack. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group will swing by. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip Flory from Standard Grain via Music City, USA, Varsity Joe Vaklevic! How we doing, Joe?
Oh, I'm great. Great, wonderful. I don't know where that applause came from. Who are the Muppets, the old guys in the Muppets that are in the balcony that boo everything?
Oh, yeah, that's those two old
That's
dudes.
Who you and Davis are going to be, or you and Chip, right?
That's right. We were going to go as a horse, but we couldn't decide which one would be the front end.
I know. Statler and Waldorf, says our producer.
Statler and Waldorf.
Uh-huh. I knew that.
I wonder if that's the Statler brothers' dad. Little showbiz trivia there. It might be.
We'll have to look that up as well.
We hadn't heard that.
I had not either. We have a good show today. Farmers are very busy. The markets were kind of slow. We have Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets on the show today, one of our favorite guests. And corn was down a couple, beans up a couple ticks. Wheat got beat up a little bit, but nothing overly exciting. Last week was kind of slow. This week kind of beginning on a slower note or kind of smack dab in the middle of corn harvest. Weather's been okay for some people. We've got some cold temperatures coming in this week, I think.
Yes, that's right. Some cold temperatures coming in, some cold weather sort of events coming across this part of the country, too.
Drier, though, I think. You guys out in Iowa, you're not going to get too much rain at all the next week, I don't think, are you?
Snow? We're supposed to get a fair amount, actually, according to...
Are you?
Yeah.
The map I saw.
We had
fake news maps.
We had the gang from BAMWX on this morning in the morning hour, and if his forecast is realized, that's what we always say, isn't it? If realized, I might need my shovel.
No.
Just might.
No.
I have yet to winterize my lawnmower, so.
I got rid of my snowblower when I moved. They told me to get rid of it. I haven't even shoveled yet.
Oh, it's going to snow down there for sure.
No, definitely not. All right, let's go to the news.
Yeah. Well, December softwood futures fell to an 8-session low this morning and continued to soften throughout the session. Concerns that the election of a new president in Argentina will excite near-term sales from that nation added to price pressure. The new president is expected to increase export taxes in December. Pressure was limited by reports Russian wheat stocks are down 8% from a year ago. And if I saw that right, their shipping pace is 18% below the year ago pace. Export inspections were reportedly within the export inspections were within expectations of traders. December hard red futures 5.75 cents lower, 4.17. December soft red futures fell 6 cents to 5.11 3/4. December spring wheat 8 cents lower, 5.28 3/4. Joe, I couldn't see a whole lot that would really account for this nickel 6-8 cent move to the downside in wheat futures, except maybe anxiety about this new Argentine president. I mean, with the export.
Yeah, I don't know. That headline and the lower market being based purely off that is kind of a reach, I think. But I don't know. Wheat's acted okay here recently. This is a down day today. I'm kind of surprised the spring wheat market acted as poorly as it did. They've still got, I mean, that problem up north and in the northern U.S. and also maybe even more so in Canada is going to it's not going away anytime soon. We've still got a lot of fund money short that market, too.
You bet. Well, I didn't think I'd be saying this, Joe, but better than expected yields reported in some areas pressured corn futures in today's trade. But a round of wintry weather across the nation's midsection will likely slow progress as the week unfolds. Export inspections of corn reported this morning were very light at just 380,000 metric tons. Meanwhile, fund managers increased short positions, although, Joe, commercials cut net short positions for the second consecutive week. But overall, I'm seeing a general lack of fresh bullish news tempering upside enthusiasm today. December corn futures fell 2¾ cents, 384. March corn softened 3 cents to 394.5. May corn closed at 401.5, down 2.5 cents on the day. Is this the kind of thing we expect during harvest, Joe?
Well, it's a debate. I mean, did we post a real early harvest low back in September when right. these corn got down to 352 or whatever it was? Or is there still a chance that you make another run at those sort of levels? I hope not. A lot of it will come down to where production ends up and USDA reports. We're going to talk about that with Ken here in a little bit.
Great. Well, soybean futures were buoyed by the November contract's ability to hold above Friday's low in the overnight session. Some weekend rains, which slowed harvest progress, limited pressure, but rains also fell in Brazil and were viewed as beneficial for soybean plantings there. As the U.S. and China work to hammer out the details on phase one of the trade deal, traders are looking for actual evidence of increased ag purchases by China. Export inspections came in at a solid 1.568 million metric tons, pushing export commitments even farther ahead of Europe. Here we go. November bean futures a half cent higher, 920¾. Jan beans up a penny, 935½. March beans closed at 947¾. That's also up a penny on the day, Joe.
Yeah, the bean market did not have a good close on Friday. As with corn, I think that there are a lot of people who still believe that there's wiggle room on the balance sheets and in terms of this production number that USDA could still be too heavy. And I don't know if that's the case, but we've sold beans to China. We need to see shipments, and we probably need to see some additional sales as well.
Right. Well, on your livestock closes, Deese cattle 52.5 cents higher, 116.60. Novi feeders firmed 35 to 145.72.5. And on the snout side, Deese hogs were 72.5 cents higher at 65.65. February lean hogs added 62.5 cents to 73.97.5. Joe.
All right, let's go to the CME group. We've got Jack Scoville from Price Futures Group. Jack, how are you today?
Hey, doing great. Watching snow, some snow trying to form up out here. So it's supposed to snow later on this week. So hopefully not. Hopefully not. It's a little early for me.
Price action in the grain market's kind of slow. Wheat market got beat up a little bit. We've got a report next week. What do you expect from USDA next week? Anything groundbreaking here?
I guess I was thinking that they were going to cut the estimates, but I haven't really seen that show up enough in the in some of the yield reports that I've been getting to suggest mm-hmm. that really has to be the case. So I'm kind of thinking kind of steady as she goes, maybe a little bit lower or something like that, but really nothing too terribly exciting. And on the demand side, there's certainly no reason to show increased demand for corn or wheat that I can see. So the demand side for those two markets should probably be poor. The beans, if you're optimistic about a China deal, and I think there's reason to think that we'll get something together, maybe we keep the bean demand intact. Maybe even push it up just a smidge, but I think it would be just a smidge.
When it comes to corn exports, there's been a lot of talk about how poor the pace there is. Does USDA wait a month or two before making another revision for new crop or for this 1920 corn, or is it something that they could do next week?
They could do it next week if they wanted to. I think they cut it, though, pretty heavily last month. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they take a month off to see how things work, to see if things start to get better. I thought they were pretty aggressive with the move last month. I thought they could have waited another month or two, but they went ahead and did it. So maybe they'll just sit back and see how it develops from here for a while.
Very good. Thank you, Jack. That's Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. Joe V filling in for Chip. We will be back here on AgriTalk with Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. Davis is here. Dan Vaught's going to be on with Tech Talk and Kerry Artak later in the show. Back on AgriTalk in a few.
Talking with Paul Lugent, Syngenta Seed Care Specialist out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Paul, why should wheat growers use a seed treatment, and which product do you recommend?
With Syngenta, we recommend that the wheat growers use our seed treatment because what happens below ground, which we don't always see, is just as important as what we notice above ground. We recommend our CruiserMax Vibrant Cereal seed treatment for a couple different reasons. One, we've got three fungicides and an insecticide in there, but with that, we get enhanced root health and early season disease and insect protection with that. Vibrance, which is one of the products in our CruiserMax Vibrant cereals, gives us a stronger, more vigorous root system, as well as Cruiser, which gives us an overall vigor effect, which, along with the Vibrance, then we get a bigger, healthier plant. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that bigger, healthier plant being protected from insects and diseases is going to help those that wheat seed come up out of the ground, be more uniform in its stand. It's going to be able to withstand the winter better, and then next spring come back to life and help improve not only the crop itself, but by filling in and growing a little more vigorous, it's going to also help hold back some of the weeds that we may have in there.
All right. Paul, what kind of performance have you seen with Cruiser Max Vibrant cereals there in South Dakota?
Since we've introduced Cruiser to be used on our cereals products, especially winter wheat here in South Dakota, what we've noticed is, just like earlier, with Cruiser on that seed, we see that the insects aren't affecting the development or the stand. It's letting all that wheat seed germinate and start coming up at the same time for a more uniform germ and more uniform emergence. And with the vigor from the Cruiser, then what happens is it's very important that all those plants can compete with each other so that they all throw a uniform head. And along with that, the Vibrance is giving it a little tougher root system and a more vigorous root system underneath the ground. And that way it's able to, again, withstand the winters that we have up here and get going in the spring then healthier and help our wheat growers have a very profitable crop.
All right. Thank you, Paul. That is Paul Luchens, Syngenta Seed Care Specialist out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. Dalaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. Dalaro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. Dalaro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Spend 3 days focused on building your dairy business at Milk Business Conference, November 11th through the 13th, 2019, in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. New this year, Hemp College is being co-hosted with Milk Business Conference. Find reliable sources to answer all your hemp questions and the latest information on agronomic best practices. Register for both events at milkbusinessconference.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do.
You can't see them, but they're coming for your soybeans. Pythium, Phytophthora, and soybean cyst nematodes are serious threats, and they require serious seed protection. Valent USA has developed a 1-2-punch defense so growers can take the next step in soybean protection. Intego Sweet Soybeans has 4 powerful modes of action against insects and diseases that work in tandem with Aveo Easy Nematicide to stop soybean pests and diseases before they strike. Find out more at soybeanprotection.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
I have that phobia. Davis helps me through it, though.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Hey, this might help just a little bit. Maybe it'll help no one. I went ahead and looked up the two old dudes. I actually Googled who were the two old dudes on The Muppet Show.
Yes.
Apparently, Statler and Waldorf were named after two historic New York City hotels, the Statler Hilton and the Waldorf Astoria. So much for my theory about him being the dad of the Statler brothers.
Well, you should know that. I mean, if you're going to be that for Halloween, you should know who they are.
Well, so I feel like I'm qualified now. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you and Chip split your candy down the middle?
Or? No, I get like 5%. It's brutal, Joe.
Oh, that's not fair.
That's
you should
all right.
You should protest.
I'm watching my figure. I'm watching my figure. You know,
you are. He's very tall, but he's very lean, folks. He's very lean. All right. The stock market's making new all-time highs today. We've got Ken Morrison on the markets on the phone. Ken, you there?
I am here. How are you, Joe?
I'm good. Glad to have you back on the show. I wanted to actually start off with the stock market. This seems to be one of those rallies that people are suspicious of, or maybe they don't like the rally so much. Is there enough here for all-time highs in the stock market? I mean, obviously there is, but what's your take?
Oh, you're asking me something that's kind of out of my wheelhouse, but I do agree with you. I think it's not one of the most well-liked record stock markets that we've ever had. I do watch sentiment very closely in a lot of different markets, and I think the bullish sentiment in the S&P right now is something in the mid to high 60% level. You usually don't expect to see markets get kind of overdone until they get into the 90% level on the bullish side. So from the sentiment standpoint, there's still, I guess, some room to move, but it also illustrates the skepticism that I think the overall consensus is about this rally. So, you know, the expectations, I'm a little surprised that the expectations are widely held that the Fed will cut rates when they announce their decision on Wednesday. But we'll see how that goes. That may be a defining moment for the stock market as well.
To move into less exciting markets, the corn market has kind of consolidated this month, I suppose you could say. We've come off of those highs from a couple weeks ago. Would you argue that the corn market's held up okay, given everything that we know so far?
A couple of weeks ago, I did what I call a deep dive on several charts, of which corn and wheat and beans were some of them. And I said 2 weeks ago, I thought we were in a kind of a 405 to 385 mostly trading range. I said I would be surprised if December corn broke 380. So I guess from that standpoint, I'd have to say it's pretty much aligned where I have thought it would be. It still looks like it can drift a little bit lower. It might even break that 380 number that I would be surprised at. But, it's certainly in the drift mode. And I think with a little, you know, with quite a bit of harvest still in front of us, I think we're going to need a surprising catalyst to kind of move us out of this, 380-ish to 405 level, let me put it that way.
So fundamentally, it seems like, you know, if you're a bear in the corn market, your story is demand. You know, exports are no good. The ethanol grind is no good. If you're a bull, you're hanging your head on the idea that USDA's got to come down with their production number. Is it really that simple at this point?
Well, I think I would have to say that the bear sentiment has been the dominant sentiment in terms of the influence on prices. I don't label myself either in the bull or the bear camp, but I do. I'm a skeptic about the demand side. I'm also a skeptic that there's. Well, let me be more clear about that. USDA's adjustment on corn demand in October was in total the 200 million. Bushel reduction in demand was in total what I expected. I thought it was going to be 100 million each reduction in exports and ethanol instead of it was 150 exports and 50 in ethanol. I think they're going to stand pat on that probably in the November estimate. But I will say my bias in the numbers support this is that the bias is still to the downside on the demand risk.
In terms of prices, you know, we're quite a bit better than we've been in each of the last 5 or 6 years seasonally. I mean, we have not seen December corn futures in the $380-$394 range at smack dab in the middle of harvest for a long time. And cash corn prices, even better than that by comparison. So how do you justify that? I mean, given the carryout numbers we've seen, given everything that we know.
Well, you know, the last time I was on with you, we were talking about how can you rationalize the high basis levels with the, you know, what we think is at that time, or what we thought was at that time, was an excess of a $2 billion carryover. Well, USDA solved part of that problem with the September 1 stocks, but basis is still high. We're very early into the harvest progress. My old rule of thumb from my cash grain trading days was you don't really see a movement much in basis until you get to about the 70% mark in places like Illinois and Iowa. So, you know, in terms of harvest pressure, but, you know, I think we'd also have to say that producers are still inclined to want to store as much as they can, and that's probably applicable to corn as well as soybeans. So there's not been a whole lot of reason for the basis to be under pressure up to this point in time. I wouldn't exclude that that's still going to come, but, you know, unfortunately, it's not been manifested in better futures prices. It seems like it's letting the basis do all the work.
So typically, though, we do get to that 70% mark, give or take. I mean, that's when you start to see basis soften up a little bit. So this strong basis could be a function of delayed harvest at this point, kind of.
I think I would attribute a lot of it to the slow pace of harvest. I would attribute another share of it to simply the tendency to want to put corn away to the extent that it can be held in producers' hands for a while. So, you know, I think both of those factors are still yet to be played out. I also want to make a comment about I don't think I'm being too much of a stretch here when I say the bias, certainly to this point, and I think even still, the bias has been that the ultimate or the eventual final corn yield is going to be less than what we've seen USDA report up to this time. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a late harvest year. It's obviously also a late planted year. So I went back in last week, or as of the 20th of October, which up until about 3 o'clock today is the latest number that we have, last week's harvest progress in corn happened to be the fifth slowest harvest season basically on record. So I went back and looked at the final yields in those late harvest years, of which 3 years happened to be also on the top 10 list of the late planted years. And I went back and looked at what the final corn yields were relative to the October estimates. In all four cases of the previous years, obviously we don't know 2019 yet, but in all four previous years, final corn yields were either higher or were either equal to or higher than the October estimates. So that's a little bit of a, I guess, counter to the notion that late planted years, late harvest years always seems to be a bias that the final corn yields were going to be less than what we saw early on. So I'm just not convinced that this year is going to be any different than those last four examples of late planting, late harvest years. So I guess I would caution people about predicating their marketing strategy upon a lower corn production number eventually.
I think that's actually a fantastic comment, and it's a very good statistic. And I think what a lot of people have forgotten in all of this is that we're already working with a lower yield number. I mean, the yield number that's being projected is already down, 4 or 5% from last year. And yeah, maybe some people believe that it should be lower, but I do think that there are people who are working marketing plans with the assumption that we're going to see a lower yield number, and that's just not a guarantee from what you're telling me. In fact, the odds favor maybe the other way.
You know, my guidance is always probability, and when I can seek out or see probabilities that go counter to the prevailing consensus, I get a little concerned. You know? So it's hard to bet against the house, let me put it that way.
Understandable. Ken, we've got to go to a break here. That's Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. He'll be back in our next segment. Joe V filling in for Chip here on AgriTalk. We'll be back.
The sounds of success vary from person to person. Success sounds like this to a Credenz soybean grower. Along with 43 new varieties this year, Credenz soybeans come with agronomic expertise from BASF. That means expert advisors who bring local insights on seed selection, management decisions, and crop protection options. Knowing the kind of success you're shooting for? That's smart. Talk to your authorized Credenz retailer or local BASF seed advisor. Always read and follow label directions.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
It's time for Tech Talk here on AgriTalk. We've got Pro Farmer Senior Market Economist Dan Vaught in the AgriTalk studio. Dan, which is the market move that matters the most today?
Hey, Joe, I'm also looking at corn, December corn futures today. After rallying last spring, the corn market posted a summer breakdown on ideas that 2019 U.S. production would still prove very large. It created a V-bottom from around $3.75 per bushel to its early September low at $3.52 and a quarter. It's rallied to $4.02 and a half on October 14th, but has since declined. It fell to $3.83 and three quarters today, with the week close implying further short-term losses. But it looks likely to find major support from its 40-day moving average around 379 to the top of the late summer bottoming pattern around 375. Current fundamentals don't seem very promising at this point, but the technicals still suggest potential for a resumption of the late summer rally.
Thank you very much, Dan. That is Dan Vaught from Pro Farmer. He says his mom won't take him trick-or-treating. Poor guy. We'll be back on AgriTalk.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Spend 3 days focused on building your dairy business at Milk Business Conference, November 11th through the 13th, 2019, in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. New this year, Hemp College is being co-hosted with Milk Business Conference. Find reliable sources to answer all your hemp questions and the latest information on agronomic best practices. Register for both events at milkbusinessconference.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Let the proven performance of Prosaro fungicide maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. Joe back with Vic Standard Grain, filling in for the Chipster today. If you'd like to get a hold of us, hashtag on Twitter, AgriTalk. Davis.
Joe.
Are you Statler or Waldorf?
I don't know, but I've been sitting in this chair for too long.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. You got to keep working, but it's good. It's getting there. You're very close.
I'll tune it in as best I can.
You got a quick market recap for us?
December hard red futures 5.75 cents lower, 4.17. D soft red futures fell 6 cents, 5.11 3/4. December corn futures off 2 3/4 to 3.84. March corn fell 3 cents to 3.94 1/2. November bean futures were 0.5 cent higher, 9.20 3/4. Jan beans gained a full penny, 9.35 1/2. On the livestock side, December cattle 52.5 cents higher at 116.60. November feeders up 35 cents, 145.72 1/2. And December lean hog futures 72.5 cents higher at 65.65. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Joe.
Thank you, sir. We are back with Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets. Ken, we'll shift gears. We'll go to the soybean market.
Before we go to the soybean market, I see we have a question on Twitter that I think we can address because it follows up with what we were discussing a while ago. From U.S. Grain on Twitter, he's asking about what about final yields in late planted years. I have the 9 previous late planted years. Of course, 2019 is number 10 on the list. And corn yields in 6 of the 9 years when it was considered in the top 10 of the latest planted years, 6 of the 9 years, the final corn yield was higher than the August estimate. I've not plotted this against the October estimate, but the August estimate, of course, is the first objective yield estimate that USDA gives. So U.S. Grain is interested in maybe going back and looking at that relative to October. But again, it somewhat reinforces the point that I made earlier about late planted years, is that the bias tends to be, for whatever reason, that bias tends to be that corn yields kind of get better through the years and through the year that rather than worse. So I will point out the 3 years that were yields were lower than the August estimate was 1984, 93, and 95.
Very good. Fantastic information.
Okay, now we can move on to beans.
We will. So in the beans, we've got a little bit, I would say, maybe a more interesting situation in the corn. I mean, the government's telling us the carryout's going to be cut in half year over year, essentially, for the United States. China's back in the market. How long they're here and how much they buy, I don't know. But the bean market, as of last week before Friday's sell-off, I mean, we were kind of hovering around essentially what had been the highs for the year. So do we have a story here, you think, or a better story at least?
I think we have a story that is beginning to become realistic. And by mm-hmm. that, I mean my position on the China trade talks is this. We don't need a trade. We don't need a long-term commitment or an LTA or a deal commitment from China based on what would be their normal demand. You know, if there's anything that China has proven to us over the last 45 days is that they're going to grant exemptions to their soybean crushers to the extent that they believe they need U.S. supply. And I think a couple of conditions that they've laid out toward any size trade deal is that any size trade deal must be A, price competitive. The U.S. must be price competitive, and it must meet China's demand. So I think when they flagged or signaled last week that they believe that they could commit to $20 billion in year one of a phased trade deal, I think they're basically saying, we think this is our best estimate of what demand will need from, or what supply that we will need from the U.S. over the next year. So in my view, I think the market is becoming to realize that that's kind of where we're headed with China. Yes, they are back in the U.S. market, but I think they're going to be back in the U.S. market to answer your question, how much will China buy? They will be back in the U.S. market to the extent that they need U.S. supply. And as long as it's price competitive, they will buy from whoever is the most price competitive. So that's kind of where we are right now. I think $20 billion is a realistic level that, taking all U.S. commodities combined with what they're going to be able to source from other areas, I think the market is finally becoming to the realization that that's kind of where we are with the U.S.-China trade deal.
So if what you just told me is correct, I mean, we're back to a soybean situation with China that we were in pre-trade war. I mean, the tariffs are just a formality if they're going to waive them whenever they need the beans. I mean, is that far from reality to say that?
I don't think that is reality, Joe. And you're exactly right. It looks like we're just kind of headed to, back to normal trade, which is not a bad thing. The only bad thing is, from the U.S. consumer standpoint, is that there will probably still be tariffs on China goods brought into the country. So, but yes, I'm very much in the camp that, and not just to soybeans, but for all agricultural commodities, that China will waive the exemption, waive the tariffs for their importers to the extent that they need U.S. supply.
So without really taking a political side here, I mean, you can't really look at the trade war and look at Trump and say, oh, Trump's ruining the bean market anymore. I mean, we can't really say that. I mean, maybe he did, you know, for the last however many months. But I mean, moving forward here, if that's really the deal, I mean, that's not really an argument you can make, I don't think.
I think the only argument at this point that you can make, if you want to build a case for the effect that has already occurred that may be difficult to reverse, once you put new acreage into production in any country, it's hard to remove that production. You have that capacity built up. And so I think to the extent that the trade war and the encouragement to buy non-U.S. that existed for roughly 18 months, I think to the extent that that was the, you know, the reality of the marketplace is it put additional acreage into production in Brazil, and we won't be able to get that market share back easily. Let me put it that way.
Now, do you think, and this is probably hard to answer, but was that acreage coming anyways? I mean, maybe at a slower pace, but...
Yeah, I think that's true, Joe. But if you look back at a year ago when there was absolutely no business from the U.S. to China in soybeans, and the prices of beans traded in Brazil were, you know, astronomically 100 plus over, just simply as a result of the tariffs that were strictly enforced against U.S. beans, that sent a major signal to the Brazilian producer. And so, you know, the acreage that was put into production probably got accelerated last year a little bit, and some of that is probably carried over into this year. I mean, I've seen numbers tossed around about how much of the Amazon has been, you know, plowed up or whatever they do to it to make it tillable. I think there's some residual effect there. But, I think now we're kind of back on, you know, just pure market fundamentals in terms of whichever is the cheapest origin. And I would add, you know, the window for the U.S. competing on business with Brazil to China is somewhat limited. I mean, February forward, their offers are already at harvest level prices for Brazil, you know, and that means 40 or 60 cents a bushel discount to the U.S. So we've got kind of a narrow window to even compete, even on the basis of tariff exemptions, so this last 10 million tons that was granted, I think you can build a case that probably establishes China's demand for U.S. beans at least through January.
So that's the demand side of it. Let's talk the production side. Are you fairly comfortable with what USDA has out there in terms of a U.S. production number at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I couldn't probably argue with the logic that the later planted beans, historically will not yield what the earlier planted beans will be. So I can't, as much as I do with corn, I can't make the case that people are wrong-headed if they think the final bean yield will be a little less than what the October estimate was. But again, I wouldn't look for a big change there.
And what's the update on South American production? It kind of seems like Brazil planting is kind of about where it should be relative to normal. They had some issue with dryness.
Mato Grosso has made a lot of progress. Mato Grosso, and I think, in fact, maybe a little ahead of the five-year average. Brazil as a whole is a little below the five-year average. The effect I see there may be more on the second crop corn than it is actually on the soybean effect. So, you know, but weather obviously is something that we have to continue to watch and always watch at this time. You know, it's still dry in many parts of Brazil, although some of that's getting taken care of. But, you know, Paraná State is certainly, you know, in need of some rain, I think.
Real quick, in about 20 seconds, when you talk about the second corn crop, you're talking maybe reduced acreage because of the late planting. Is that the effect there, potentially?
Not so much reduced acreage as I would say it benefits the U.S. in so much as if the Brazilian second corn crop is later than normal. So it gives us a little bit of more of a window, let's say in March and April, perhaps, to, have a decent export corn demand before the Brazilian corn crop comes off.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ken. That is Ken Morrison, Morrison on the Markets, one of my favorite guests on the show. Jovi filling in for Chip today. We've got Kerry Artek, our tech advisors. We're going to talk charts when we come back on AgriTalk.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
And then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Spend 3 days focused on building your dairy business at Milk Business Conference, November 11th through the 13th, 2019, in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. New this year, Hemp College is being co-hosted with Milk Business Conference. Find reliable sources to answer all your hemp questions and the latest information on agronomic best practices. Register for both events at milkbusinessconference.com.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
and try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe V filling in for the Chipster here a couple of days before Halloween. Davis, that was an interesting stat from Ken about the corn yields. There is a prevailing opinion among many that the corn yield number has to come down and yes. The acreage has to come down. Mm-hmm. And Ken says history does not tell you that that is what's going to happen here.
Mm-hmm. And even if it does, it may not be till, what, September next year?
That's what they did this year. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, every year is different, but what he told us was that late planted, late harvest years, there's not a lot of precedent for this corn number to go lower at this point. And that, in fact, there is plenty of precedent for the corn yield number to move higher at this point. And people are going to flip out if that happens, man.
So what we really need to do is figure in the acreage, then the harvested acreage, and look at the final production number. Is that what we come to? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're after. I mean, the yield's not, it's a two pieces to production. I mean, acreage and yield, and both of them are subject to change, I suppose, this year. So we'll see what happens. Wait and see. Yeah, a lot of reports coming up. Mm-hmm. We've got Kerry Artek, Artek Advisors. Kerry, you on the phone?
I am, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I was informed that you would like to discuss some charts today.
Yeah, I typically go over three markets. Today I got Dece corn, Jan beans, and Dece live cattle. So I'll jump into corn right now. All right. Starting with the longer-term dynamic and working my way into nearer term, a reminder that in early September, we tested long-term support at 354 even, and following that test, I maintained a 429 even, 2 to 3 month upside objective. Inside this wide range between 354 even and 429 even, a near-term ceiling at 398 and a quarter, and a near-term floor at 375 and three quarter are both able to absorb weekly activity. The market did test 398 and a quarter near-term ceiling in mid-October, and it now appears that 375 and three quarter near-term floor may be in reach, say by the end of next week. A surprise settlement this Friday below 375 and three quarter would indicate a retest of 354 even long-term support within 1 to 2 weeks, where the broader corn market can bottom out through next year, and as I mentioned a moment ago, above which 429 even is expected over the next 2 or 3 months. So that said, a settlement above 398 and a quarter is ultimately expected, and if this week Friday we should reach 429 even by the end of November, where the broader corn market can top out through winter. On to January beans. A couple weeks ago on the show, I mentioned that the broader bean market remains constructive into later year, and with regard to the January bean contract, that remains true above 924 even. The 924 even level able to absorb selling through December, and above which this market should continue up to 10.02 even by the end of December. 10.02 even is considered a long-term ceiling able to contain broader market buying through next spring. Now, downside, a weekly settlement Friday below 9.24 even would indicate a good high through the balance of the year. I'd be off that 10.02 even target and then would expect 8.65 and a quarter over the next couple of months with a January contract can bottom out into expiration. But bottom lining, beans bullish above 9.24 even. And finally, December live cattle, since the early September test of long-term support at 93.60 when the October contract was lead, I'd maintained a 2 to 3 month upside target at 116.52. In fact, last week and again today, the DEES contract has tested this important resistance area. Now that we've done so, there is a case to be made for bearish retracement down to about 105.80 by December expiration. On the other hand, a clear weekly settlement Friday above 116.52 would merely maintain this decidedly bullish dynamic through winter, 123.87, then expected, say, by the end of November. And the next 3 to 5 months likely to yield 132 even, where the broader live cattle market can top out into next summer. That 132 even, want to underscore target, only a reality if we close this week above 116.52. Until then, overbought trade can emerge into later year. And that's about all I've got for those three markets, Joe.
Thanks, Kerry. Those are some big time ranges you're talking in the cattle market. That's some crazy stuff.
It is, but we've come a long way in a short period of time, and I just think that this breadth that we've maintained can continue, for the next several months if we can get above 116.52 on Friday.
Oh, I don't doubt any of that stuff. A lot of big ranges there recently. Thank you very much, Kerry. We'll talk to you next week, I guess.
Sounds great. Yes. Talk to you then. Bye.
Davis.
Yes.
Tweet of the day.
Well, today's tweets are brought to you by that Monday feeling. No matter what day it may be, that Monday feeling can pop up at any given time, given the right circumstances. And now today's tweets at J.S. Reinecker. Happy Monday morning to everyone except communists, Nazis, and that guy that invented telemarketing. At Jobman Ag, hashtag Harvest19, last pass here. Before the snow got too heavy, visibility was down to a half mile at times. That feels like a Monday. And at Wreck Castle, I was fine with my fiance hiring his ex to sing at our wedding until she belted out, "I will always love you," while staring straight at him. See, that's an example where that Monday feeling, you know, that feeling of foreboding, like maybe things aren't going to go that well near term. That seems like maybe a situation where that popped up.
Yeah. Telemarketers.
Has that ever happened to you? Yeah.
No, that didn't happen at my wedding. No.
No?
No.
No. Yeah, telemarketers, at J.S. Reinecker puts them right in the same category as communists and Nazis. That's a tough one. That may be overstating it.
How's a warranty on your car, Davis?
If someone would just call me, I'd love to talk to them about it.
Yeah, it seems like something that should really be discussed by a third party that has no ties at all to your car dealer.
You know, in my earlier life, I dipped into some telemarketing.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it did not go well. Sales, I just don't have that. I don't have that gland. Is it a gland? The sales.
I don't know. I think you're very charming personally, but.
Well, I appreciate that.
To each his own.
Charming is a whole lot different than able to close a sale.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Joe Vac, Vic Standard Grain. Happy to be filling in for Chip here on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you to Davis. Thank you to Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. Some very good statistics, especially that corn yield statistic, I think was fantastic and something that a lot of people probably needed to hear. Thank you to Kerry Artek from ArtekAdvisors.com. I think it's Chip back tomorrow and then I'm back Wednesday. Is that the deal?
Something like that, yeah.
I'm back Wednesday. All I know is that. So everyone have a wonderful afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow.
Looking for a great deal on your next piece of farm equipment? Well, check out Machinery Pete's Price Slasher Sale now through October 31st. It's all online at machinerypete.com/sale. Get deep discounts on a variety of equipment from dealerships across the country. Don't miss the chance to find that piece of equipment you've been looking for and for a steal.
John Machine Repeat's Price Slasher sale now through October 31st. Visit machinerypeat.com/sale now.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Thanks to Syngenta, producers of Cruiser Max Vibrant Cereal Seed Treatment, for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer today about reserving your supply for 2020. Always read and follow label instructions.